Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of it.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
The last couple seconds of a Zoom call where the person's trying to exit out of the Zoom.
Oh, it's so awkward.
Yeah.
And they're like,
dude, whenever I'm running.
The phone is the worst when you see like the actual finger, like.
Whenever I'm running a Zoom, I'll just kick them out. If I'm the host, I'll just be like, click on them, remove. Like, yeah, this is awkward. Let's
I kind of like the awkwardness. So sometimes when we're doing the show Zoom, I'll see who's the last one. It's usually Stu Gods trying to figure out how to exit. Dan just does the thing where he doesn't even close it. He just like closes the laptop.
Yes, that was such a good observation. That's such a good like pandemic humor. Like if there was a stand-up act to be made from the pandemic, it's like people leaving Zooms. Am I right?
It's interesting that you say that because we've been, taping on all of this, and the Big Suey began about 90 seconds ago as Chris and Tony said the thing. That they said, it's like my father with FaceTime. My phone will stay on my father's FaceTime. If I don't turn it off, I'll walk around in his pocket. He doesn't know. I don't know what the age limit is on how it is that people deal with the Zoom, but Mike has learned with all of these 50-year-old sports writer types. I don't know who was the most surprising to you, but the Stephen A. Smiths, everyone else having trouble with the Zoom. My father has a personal IT guy that is being paid to help him handle the Zoom, even though the Zoom is the easiest thing in the world. It's basically clicking on a link. My father's got his guy, Jesus, that he calls because he doesn't know how to do it.
It's not just Zooms and FaceTimes. Like, this is something that I've caught on to. Are you guys the first one when you're done on a phone call to hang up? Because I always am the first one to hang up. And I've found that with certain people that I talk to on the phone, that if I'm doing something and I can't hang up and I have like AirPods in or whatever, I have it on Bluetooth, they'll just stay there. And then I'll just be like, is this person not going to hang up? Like, I know I always hang up, but is it not normal for you to hang up when a conversation's over? Am I the only one? Like, do I always initiate the hang up and most people just stay on the line and the call just ends? Like, it's not voice activated. When you say goodbye, the call doesn't just end. You have to push a button. But I have people in my life that if I don't hang up, that'll go on for 2-3 minutes where I'm just hearing what they're doing
because they just leave their phone. Is it like my dad and my mom, which it happens
no.
to? Like I will watch my dad and my mom on FaceTime try and touch the hang up button 20 times. Like I will watch them. I will delight in watching them try to hang up the phone incorrectly.
These people vary in age, but yeah, I don't get it. I mean, Dan, back in my day, you used to hang up the phone, right? Like you had the phone, you had the buttons, you'd push and you'd hang up and you'd hear the click, right? So when these little buttons came along, you had to push the button. I still click it to hang it up. I feel like I need to hang up to end the call or it'll just go on forever.
Billy, forgive me. I'm distracted here because for the first time I am seeing on a television screen here a monster truck. A zombie that has zombie arms.
The truck. Yeah, with the brain, right? The zombie. That's a good monster truck.
Awesome. It is an awesome monster truck.
Have you been to a monster truck rally, Dan?
I have.
That's such a funny visual.
Oh, you gotta go. Monster Jam is the best. I don't know how things are going now with coronavirus, but the world finals for a couple years in a row have been in Orlando. Oh my God. I haven't had the privilege of going to a world finals, but that seems to be where it's at because it becomes a 2-day event where they bring in like 80 monster trucks. If you go to a regular monster truck rally, it'll just be like 10 to 12 monster trucks, right? Now they've moved them to Marlins Park down here in Miami. Those are good. You don't want to go to the one at BB&T Center. Now, I don't want to disparage that. It's very loud. Now, Marlins Park is loud too because
they're all very loud.
Yeah, well, yeah, but the ones that are indoors are super, super loud, right? So BB&T is a smaller venue, so it's really loud. Marlins Park, if they have the roof closed, gets loud. Old Pro Player, whatever it's called, Sun Life, Hard Rock, whatever that's called, that was the best, but they stopped doing it there. but you want to go to one at a big stadium, one that's like has room. The arena one's not the best. They don't even put down the dirt sometimes, and then there's not really enough room for them to be doing tricks, and they can't. Billy, the races are a joke. Freestyle's where it's at.
I wish you were ESPN's Monsters Truck expert. Like, this was an unusual amount of passion and expertise that you exhibited on the subject, and I've just got to share with the audience. Perhaps you can help us because you're clearly more of an expert here.
Love
just I want to share the zombie truck. The zombie truck has arms that go from the rearview mirror, evidently past the front tires. So it's the zombies. I mean, it's an amazing looking truck. They're just two tendrils, two octopus tendrils that are really large. Is there a better truck than that one, Billy? Because the arms really make that truck. And I got to imagine on occasion those arms snap off.
There's one that had a giant mohawk for a while. I don't know if that's still one that exists. There's a bunch of different dog ones now. Toro Loco had a couple spin-offs. The dog ones, there's like a Doberman, there's a Dalmatian. They've gotten into the things where like a lot of the monster trucks have become so successful that they've built teams, right? So they'll have like just little things that they change. So it'll be like the dog monster truck, and then they'll add like a different like breed of dog, but it's the exact same thing. There's like 13 grave diggers. You go to a thing and you're like, oh my god, I'm gonna see grave diggers. Like, you're seeing grave digger L right now, all right? Because everyone that's going around has a grave digger in it right now. And those are like, you're always gonna see grave digger. And don't get me started, grave digger is always the favorite at all of these monster truck rallies, and I absolutely hate it. It's like the Yankees of monster trucks, and everybody's rooting for the grave digger to win, and it's like, you don't want the grave digger to win. I was always a Max D guy, because Max D used to be the Goldberg truck. When monster trucks were a thing and wrestling used to sponsor trucks, it was the Goldberg truck, and it was this crazy guy, Tom Mentz, and he would just do all kinds of stuff where he'd flip the monster truck and he'd crash into things, and he seemed to have no regard for anything that was going on. And then when they started the world finals, he was winning the freestyle every year, and then he would also win the races, and he was like an icon of monster truck racing for a short time, and he seemed like someone who was just like a journeyman, right, until he got this Goldberg truck, and then he really took off, and now he's gotten into this whole thing where Tom Mentz has like his Tom Mentz Monster Truck Rally Academy that you can go to and learn how to drive monster trucks, and he's really becoming like the modern day Goldberg, where there's like 1,000 different trucks, and it's not even, it was first it was Goldberg, then it was like Team Mentz, and then it became Maximum Destruction, which was Max D. And Max D also was the one that did the first backflip. So the way they do the backflip is they get the shipping containers, right? So the shipping containers are what they line the stadiums with, because apparently shipping containers are super strong, right? So you go and you basically hit the shipping container till you're upright, and then you hit the gas, and then the momentum will take you over. And then what he does in the world finals sometimes is he adds fireworks to the top of his monster truck. Wow. So when he goes and he's upside down, he hits the button wherever the button is inside the monster truck, and then it's just like, and it's just like a bunch of fireworks and sparklers doing all these loops. And there was a double backflip once. We don't need to get into that.
How do you win these monster truck competitions? Are they races? Are they races, or are they like scale of like 0 to 10? Like, what's
okay? You want an elaboration from him? You want an elaboration?
I just don't know. Like,
how they get out?
I mean, I never know. Wait a minute. Just hold on for just a second. I'll let you continue.
Everyone, calm down. Everyone,
I just have to marvel after all these years doing this together, Billy. How long have we been doing this together? How many years has this been?
10.
I just never know what is the subject that is going to really get Billy going.
Well, now you know.
And now I know it's monster trucks. It took me 10 years. Yes,
they're
Billy,
great,
please
Dan.
Continue.
Monster trucks are great. The thing is that freestyle. Okay, Chris. So now there's the racing portion, and then there's freestyle. But then they've added like other things, like a wheelie competition that you can win also. But the two big ones are the race and the freestyle. And everybody knows freestyle is where it's at, because the race is just you go around in a loop, whatever, and you see who's the fastest. Freestyle is where they crash into things and they destroy things like boom, 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 all of that stuff that you want to see, right? Now, here's an unpopular opinion. Freestyle has really gone downhill in monster truck racing, and I don't know what the cause of it is. I don't know if people were getting on them because they were being very wasteful when you bring in a boat and you have monster trucks crashing into boats and buses and whatever, but you don't really see that many things anymore that are being destroyed in freestyle. You pretty much have the set like cars that are there, but they won't bring in a giant boat, or they won't be grave Gravedigger used to bring in every time like a hearse, which was also unfair because Gravedigger was the only one that would have special props brought in before freestyle. And it's like, oh, a hearse is coming. I wonder who's going to be going against that hearse. It's not going to be the Carolina Crusher, I'll tell you that much. It's obviously going to be Gravedigger that's coming in to crush that hearse that they're bringing in. But if you have extra props, you're obviously going to have more opportunity for points, and it's fan voting. So they always pick up like four or five suckers in the front row that want to hold up the cards with the votes, right? Front row sounds great, not monster trucks. If you're in monster trucks, you want to be kind of in the middle level, maybe a little bit higher.
It's dangerous, right? There are parts that can come flying at you.
Just in case you don't want to be too close. Now, that's maybe me being better safe than sorry, but you know what? I've never gotten killed at a monster truck rally, so I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing,
Chris,
and sitting a little bit higher.
Have you seen, I saw you, I don't know whether you saw before, you called up the zombie truck. Had you seen it before? Did the arms make you laugh out loud, how long the arms are and how committed they are to the bit of making the truck look like a zombie?
Are they always out like that? Do they move? I'm imagining that sometimes they move.
No, what they are is they're always, you know, the zombie's not marching with his arms directly in front of him or herself. He's marching or she's marching with the arms up in the air a little bit. But when they hit bumps, the arms go down to about parallel to the ground when they go down, giving the illusion that the truck is a zombie. Anyway, moving on, 8 minutes too late.
There's an ice cream truck, by the way. There is. It's built like a Good Humor truck. I thought Chris would be interested in that.
I'm interested in that as well, but not so interested that I want to keep doing monster truck
talk. It's good that you said he or she the driver, because there are a lot of women drivers that are driving now, Dan. Even Medusa, the former wrestler, is a monster truck driver.
What?
Get out. Stop it.
No, she used to drive. She drove the Medusa truck for a long time. I don't know if she's still driving the Medusa truck.
The Medusa truck is a nice truck. I'm looking at it now, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I was a little kid, Bigfoot was the big deal. And then Gravedigger took Bigfoot's slot. Is Bigfoot still around?
Yes.
I don't know. But look, I'm looking right now, for example, El Toro Loco. And then there's a spinoff. Now, El Toro Loco obviously is the crazy bull, right? There's a spinoff of El Toro Loco Ice. Why do you need a crazy bull on ice? You see what I'm saying? They just start getting into like these franchises of monster trucks. And it's like, let's get with something, you know, original. We don't need to do that. Like the Jailbird or the Jester, Iron Outlaw, stuff like that.
What would you guys say is the worst televised sport? Because I would argue that monster truck is probably,
you shut your mouth,
is probably second worst behind drag racing.
Oh, get out.
You guys ever see like on FS1 just drag racing? It's just like, what are they doing
here? You don't know what you're talking about. You obviously never watched TNN when Monster Truck was on every Friday night.
And Roller Derby Friday nights.
No, Roller Derby was so dope on TV. Are you kidding me? Here's and then when you drive in Orlando and you would see where they would do the Roller Derby, you saw like the actual arena where they did, and you're like, oh man, we're supposed to go to Epcot tomorrow, but do we have time to sneak in a Roller Derby match? I don't know. Yeah. I never did.
TNN Fridays. That was always so great. There is actually, to answer your question, Chris, though, there is this, number one, I don't know who's watching all these auction shows on NBCSN that aired before or after Premier League games. What is the market to watch people bid on cars? I don't know. But there is this sport that is kind of like drag racing, but slow. Basically, it's a competition to see what cars can tug the most weight. And it's like very short. And I'm like, this has to be the single worst sporting event that is televised on any network. Who is watching this?
I watched some cornhole last night.
Oh, that's good TV.
They're excellent.
It's actually not terrible.
They are excellent.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I marvel at how good cornhole players are. But Billy, not as much as I marvel at the fact that not only Monster Truck, but also Roller Derby brought out more enthusiasm from you than I got during the entire Heat run. Like
everybody's talking about the Heat. No one's talking about TNN.
He's right, you know.
So I want to marvel at something, because if you've been listening to our radio show for a long time, you know that basically since the beginning, I have had an incredible admiration for what Sacha Baron Cohen does in terms of comedy, going high and low with some of what he does that's performance art. He's the modern day Andy Kaufman. It goes back a long way. He had to stop doing an Ali G character that was, a rapper who was ignorant, or a rapper type who was ignorant and would just do these interviews as a spoof, and it reminded you of Phil Henry. I've told you about Phil Henry before. You will see the imprint of Phil Henry in some of the things that you see hiding in the shadows here, an homage to In the Big Suey and the Local Hour with some of the people that we're playing with there. Those of you who know what I'm talking about don't need any further explanation. But Phil Henry basically was a radio genius, Hendry with a D in the middle. And you should check out some of his stuff, because what he would do in South Florida and all over the country eventually is that he would impersonate both himself as the straight man radio host and the guest who was saying outlandish things in order to ensnare one caller.
Yep.
And he always ensnared one caller so that he could argue as both the host and the crazy person against the caller. And the audience is laughing at the joke as the caller is getting angrier and angrier because this fake person in studio with Phil Henry is saying deliberately outrageous things to get a rise out of the caller. But only the audience knows it. And many people tuning in for the first time don't know that he's both characters because he does it so well. He doesn't interrupt himself somehow in a way that is awkward. He does it well where he makes it sound conversational, like the host is there and the guest is there, even though he's the same person.
If he was two people, now, call me skeptical if you'd like, is it possible he was three people and he was also the caller who was upset with himself and the callers weren't actually falling for his trick and he was having an argument with himself and then an argument with a caller who was also himself?
That is not a genius that I can fathom, but I couldn't fathom the way that he does it. Right, Stugatz? The way that he does
that's next level, though, Bill.
That is even harder. That is even more difficult. That would be better, but it was really hard to tell that he was counterfeit, and it was really hard to tell for a long time. But Ali G, who predates most of you, or you would have been kids at the time that Sacha Baron Cohen was doing some of this stuff, getting famous in England, he couldn't do it anymore simply because he became too famous and it was too hard to ensnare people. So now, fast forward all this time later, and now Borat has another movie coming out, timed, I'm assuming, specifically to be right before the election. And what they've been sitting on, Stugatz, is this bombshell where you've got Trump's lawyers engaging in behavior that is super suspicious, Rudy Giuliani, and it's done as performance art. But it ends up becoming like great journalism for our times, the idea that he has footage tricking Rudy Giuliani into what looks like a compromised position with someone who was Borat's 15-year-old daughter, and now Giuliani is making these ridiculous claims that he was just tucking in his shirt and he wasn't laying down on the hotel bed fiddling around inside his pants because he was interested in this 15-year-old that he kept touching.
But, how?
But I know, that's exactly my point. And then Borat runs into the room wearing like some sort of bikini thong and says, "Take me instead," which is not, you know how hard it is to make pedophilia or a sting operation funny? Like, I know Chris Hansen did it for years, but the degree of difficulty on making pedophilia funny is really hard. And he came running in, later than a sting operation that would have made it even more obvious and even grosser what it is that was happening. I just can't believe, though, Stugatz, that Borat, of all people, is the journalist for our times in 2020. Giuliani is still out here saying he was calling the cops on Borat like he believes Borat's a real person. He doesn't see, until he deleted the tweets, he wasn't understanding that Borat is not Borat, that Borat is a character.
He seems like the perfect journalist for 2020, does he not? I mean, just based on what a circus show this the world is right now.
Stugatz, what I am telling you is, as I'm watching this happen, I'm like, I can't believe that this is so a couple of weeks before the election, that nobody can get traction with some of the other big stories that the New York Times is writing, and that Borat is thundering in and just dumbing it down for all of us. And we're like, wait a minute, while the president's attorney is on television making claims about Hunter Biden and pedophilia, when he's making claims about Joe Biden and pedophilia, and what ends up happening is a Borat movie? ends up using Giuliani as the single best marketing a movie has ever seen? Just free marketing from Giuliani. Like, who doesn't want to see that movie now?
Everyone does. What a weird time.
It's unbelievable. Like, you can't. But think about that. Stugatz fooling people 20 years after he became. I mean, it's probably not 20 years. How long is Ali G ago? 15 years ago? It's a long time ago, and it shows you how forgetful people can get about everything when it comes to Borat being reinvented across another generation, being able to do some of the Ali G stuff where you're just doing sort of, I don't even know how to explain the form because it's not mockumentary Spinal Tap. I don't know what the form is. It's not like anybody else can do the form. It's a bit like Candid Camera, I suppose, except with clever, you know, clever bits in the middle of it that are performance art.
The first time we saw Ali G was 1998, so it goes back a bit.
And so he became too famous in order to do that character, but a couple of weeks before the election, he's just entrapped the president of the United States chief attorney in a way that makes that movie. Mike, did they release it last night after all? Did they move it up? Because they were holding on to something here for a couple of days because they got the push that they wanted for the movie.
Yeah, today was supposed to be the scheduled release date, but Borat on his social media channels, Borat has verified social media channels, announced that it was out now, which was last night, and so there was a surprise release last night.
Did you get to it?
No.
No.
No. I mean, after that Danny Jones run, baby, come on now. I mean, I'm not turning my attention away from Wentz versus Jones.
I can't believe they went up against that game. I mean,
Wentz. I thought you were going to say Wentz. I thought you were going to do.
Wentz
up against that game.
I'm sorry. I made a mistake.
Daniel Jones, could that have happened to a funnier quarterback? Is there a quarterback in the league that could have happened to that would have made both sidelines erupt in laughter?
Because, well, I mean, Carson Wentz is up there.
Brady. Yeah. Older. You know that.
Well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Excuse me. A quarterback with whom that scenario is plausible. Not one of these. Not Andy Dalton or one of these cement footed. Joe Flacco would be funny as well.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Somebody go. Oh, that would be
Roethlisberger's the best one.
That's also not possible, though. He's not going to.
Back in the day.
No. But it's not possible that he's going to outrun a secondary. It's the fastest a quarterback has moved, according to mile per hour tracking in 3 years, Stugatz,
right.
And you can't make it up. For those of you who don't know what happened, he was in the clear running away from the secondary. It was an 80-yard run that should have clearly been longer if he wasn't clumsy and here to make us just laugh at Gettleman.
It should have been a touchdown, Dan.
An easy touchdown. He was running away from a secondary. He is a monster athlete. He's legitimately fast.
He is, yeah. It was pretty impressive to see, but he stumbled at around the 30-yard line.
No one near him.
And didn't fall till the 10, and so it was fun to watch that.
No one near him, and he was just sort of surprised to be running with desperate freedom and success towards something that looked like positivity and not laughter with the Giants.
We all were. So it's good to see Daniel Jones is not immune to being shocked at how athletic Daniel Jones is.
Is it Minshew or Roethlisberger? Maybe Sam Darnold.
This was the point that I was trying to make clunkily a couple of weeks ago. You drop Danny Jones into the 1990s and he's Steve Young.
I want, again, for all of you, I want you guys to look at all of this because Daniel Jones is absolutely galloping. And I told you when I saw Derrick Henry running away from the Texans secondary and linebackers, I was just screaming at my television. What the hell? What the hell is that? And I was doing the same thing, Stugatz, when I saw the highlight of Daniel Jones running free, romping free in a secondary. What the hell is that? And instead of gracefully doing what Derrick Henry did and completing a 94-yard run that we would be talking about for a while, he does, as Stugatz says, start losing his balance at about the 30. Now, can you? I don't have it in front of me.
I've been there, by the way.
I'm doing this from memory. How far is the nearest tackler when he starts stumbling at around exactly what yard line? Because I want to explain this to the audience that for whatever reason might not have seen it. So Daniel Jones is inside his own 10-yard line, and he does one of these. It wasn't really an RPO. It was more like a bootleg. Right?
That was a designed run.
Yeah, it was designed.
It was an off tackle with Daniel Jones.
But it was also misdirection off. It was
the misdirection was there's no way Daniel Jones goes off tackle here.
He faked a handoff to the left. Everyone went left. It was a first down call deep in their own end, and so no one figured Daniel Jones on the running play there. He faked it. Everyone went left. Daniel Jones went right, and he was wide open. I'll tell you how far the nearest defender was.
Okay, well, there was a cornerback on that side of the field, but the hole was so large and the Eagles were so fooled that Daniel Jones ends up galloping untouched for a long amount of time where guys are chasing him, but they're not making up ground.
So I'm at the 50 right now. Daniel Jones is outrunning, all right? He is outrunning two cornerbacks for the Eagles, which is impressive.
One of them is not running very hard. Number 31 gave up on that play a long time earlier, mad at his coaches.
So as of now, there is no one within 5 yards of Daniel Jones. I'll keep it rolling here.
Okay, so he is.
Oh, now he's really breaking away. At the time he stumbles, Dan, the nearest guy is about 8 yards away. At the his first stumble.
And so that is at what yard line? Like roughly
like
where?
The 25-yard line.
Okay, so he's at the 25, and where does he end up going down as he starts his stumbling?
So he starts the stumbling at the 25. Now, he really collapses at around the 10 and then rolls to the 6.
Have the tacklers at that point given up? Have all of the people in pursuit largely slowed up? Because they know that they're not going to end up catching Daniel Jones. Because I know number 31 did for the Eagles. I don't know his name, unfortunately. You'll forgive me on that. I barely got his number right. It looked like number 11 without my glasses. So.
I'll tell you in a second.
It'd be funny if it was Carson Wentz trying to tackle him.
There is absolutely the guy to the right who I think is 31. Yes, he absolutely gives up. The safety did not give up, especially once he saw Daniel Jones start to stumble, and then he started sprinting again. So,
so he was moving at one point. I think they clocked him at 23.1 miles per hour, faster than a quarterback has moved in several years in that league.
21 hustled, 31's your guy. He gave up, completely gave up.
Is there any particular reason that I cannot engage you guys on a Borat or Sacha Baron Cohen conversation? Like, it doesn't feel like I can ever get any traction with this, and I end up floundering out there by myself talking about what I believe to be one of the seminal entertainment talents of our generation. Like, what happened to his career is interesting, Stugatz, because I haven't seen what the reporting is on this. But he was at the height of his powers.
You're going to try again?
At the height of his powers, he was in a position to get made and was promised three big movies. And then Dictator came out and it didn't do as well as they were hoping. And whatever was supposed to be his deal ended up collapsing, where that happens often in Hollywood, that they can bury you in lawyers and you can't do anything about it. So he didn't end up getting other movies that he was supposed to get, and it pretty much ended there. I heard Azaria say this one time. It's not something I'd ever heard before. Like, when you are somebody who in the moment has gotten hot, they give you three chances. Three movies is what they try to sign you to. When you're the hot person who's broken out in a movie, whether it's Seth Rogen or Steve Carell, or going back to Hank Azaria and Birdcage.
Wait, the standard is if you're that person, you'll get a three-movie deal?
When Hank Azaria did Birdcage, it was such a standout performance that all of America took notice, and he had all of the most options he had were right after Birdcage, okay, because that character, which he wouldn't even do today,
sure,
because now when we're needing people to play gay, we get gay people, and when we need Latin people to play Latin people, we're not getting Al Israel and Al Pacino to do Scarface, and when we need wheelchair-bound people, we're getting wheelchair-bound actors to play those parts. So Hank wouldn't play that role today, but it was an enormous role at the time. And he got three movies after that. And he went Godzilla, which I think would have been a safe choice for anybody.
I think so, yes.
But it wasn't.
Blockbuster.
No, it wasn't. Oh, no, boy. It was a bad movie.
Yeah, bad reviews.
I'd like to know all his choices here.
Mystery Alaska and Mystery Men, I think, were the other two. And those are three. But I liked Mystery Men. I don't know how you felt about Mystery Alaska. But I... Those are three choices that you can't make. Jeremy Piven had a lot of options after Entourage, and he chose Smoking Aces, and it was a bomb. And then you saw that it fell apart on him after that. It's not a formula I'd ever heard until I heard Hank talk about it.
I think Sacha Baron Cohen just has this lane, which is the greatest prank comic of our time. It's awkward when you see him in other roles because you just kind of want to see him do what he does.
Well, he
best.
Wants to be taken seriously, but right? He's doing the Chicago 7 movie, and he did a movie.
Netflix series where he plays a spy.
That seemed like a passion project because that was a really unusual choice. That was okay. It wasn't great. I watched it because it was Sacha Baron Cohen, but it was him trying a
serious
role.
Who's America was good for that Showtime series that he worked with Nathan
Fielder on.
That
was more in the vein of what he does, though.
Yeah. I'm just trying to have the argument that he doesn't necessarily need the Borat or the Ali G established characters. It really went with Bruno because you're saying the dictator. Bruno just wasn't as well received as Borat was, and that was really his first shot post Borat, and it just didn't fly as much as Borat did because Borat was being quoted everywhere. Borat was a sensation.
I don't know if I have my time right on this, but the time that he got the dictator offers and stuff was after he had been in Talladega Nights. I thought that
he was Talladega Nights saw what was coming.
I thought that what ended up happening there, and the only reason I chronicle this is because I'm fascinated by the man's career. Because as far as comics go, this is a degree of difficulty on the awkward comedy that he has perfected that not many have been able to pull off throughout time. And so I thought after Ricky Bobby and Talladega Nights that he was going to take off, and I thought that that's where he got his three movies, and that one of them was The Dictator, and it bombed. I thought that's the order.
Borat actually was released a couple of months after Talladega Nights, and then he became the hottest name in Hollywood and give this guy all the projects.
Godzilla did $379 million. Is that good?
It made money.
Those always make money internationally, but that wasn't the point.
He was supposed to make more money.
But he was also looking for something that would make more money and be critically acclaimed.
It was supposed to be a franchise.
Well, but Stugatz, some of those movies are very well done. Hell, Chris Pratt off the Jurassic Park movies. Like, you never know with those big blockbuster monster movies whether you will also get the critical acclaim or not. But they seem a safe bet to choose as an actor.
Oh, in the 90s, considering the way the box office was going and all the marketing tie-ins, that was a safe bet. In the movie, they bake in an option for a sequel. With a cliffhanger that I'm still wondering what happens in that Godzilla universe. Godzilla is one of the proven box office commodities. That's a safe bet for Hank Azaria.
I saw a documentary the other day, and I'd be curious what you guys would say to this, because it's a very short documentary, but they managed to get, and this is something that I hadn't seen done anywhere before, they managed to get all of the Joker characters, save for, obviously, the late Heath Ledger, to talk about being the Joker. And they were making the argument in the documentary that there has been no greater villain across any American entertainment than the Joker, that he is the biggest villain that's fictional outside of Satan.
I'm with that. In all of literature, I think he's one of the finer crafted characters that there's been.
I mean, you should have heard the reverence with which all of the Jokers were talking about why they took that role and what it meant to them, you know, wherever in their childhood, or the respect for the crafting of the character. But when the claim was made, I started to think, I thought, like, who's better? Like, you know how that we've talked before, Mark Jackson initially says, before we all know it, that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are the best shooting backcourt of all time. And my initial reaction was, get out of here. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Is he right? And so
he was right.
And yes, he was right. And when they say the Joker is the single greatest, most well-known villain across the entire entertainment landscape, who are you putting up against it that would even be a worthy rival?
Patino?
Michael Myers.
Who's your favorite Joker?
Jack Nicholson.
Darth Vader.
Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger? Not Cesar Romero?
Not the original. That's Cody's favorite. That's Cody's favorite.
I mean, how are you not going to go with a Cuban Joker?
I am stunned that Stugatz is picking Jack Nicholson.
I'm not. He hasn't even watched the other movies, probably.
I haven't. No.
There you go.
It's
how many people are going to play this character?
All right, come on. Let's get real.
Jack nailed it the first time.
He didn't, though.
He did.
If you'd seen the others. I don't
want to see the others. I saw Jack.
I would not have the opinion that I have right now if not for seeing the others and seeing how much darker they went with what they did with it than Jack did, who was happy-go-lucky, not dark at all.
I think we all know which one's the worst one, and I doubt even Dan's seen his performance, but it's back on your Twitter timelines because he's getting yet another crack at it.
Jared Leto
playing the Joker was just terrible. And
so why is he getting another crack at it?
Because Zack Snyder apparently needs 18 opportunities to make one good DC movie, and he's doing all these reshoots. If at first you don't succeed, you're Zack Snyder.
So are you questioning whether or not the Joker is the greatest TV movie villain of all time?
In terms of an absolute villain.
Well, I mean, who else would be in that discussion? Is there anyone?
Darth
Vader. But the Joker had TV and had movies, you know, so it's tough. Like, I could sit here and say Hannibal Lecter, right? But that's just a movie. It was one movie.
We're
going all of literature, and you're really stretching our knowledge.
Yeah, that boxes me out.
And it's not only that we box you out, though, because you're doing like Anton Chigurh. You're just doing villains from the movies. I'm talking about echoing, enduring villains. Yes, Hannibal Lecter was a great villain, but you're talking about in Joker, you're talking about literature. You're talking about cartoons. You're talking about childhood. You're talking about across generations.
Comic books literature?
Well, that's how you add to your argument when it comes to the Joker, because you expand it beyond comic books and you still have a pretty good argument when you make it all of literature.
But are there Joker books that I'm unaware of?
Well, there's graphic novels, which are books, yes, on Joker and
comic
books.
But I understand the question Billy's asking. Do comic books count as literature? But
They do for me.
They were in the documentary. They were exploring the idea of character creation, however it is that characters get created, whether it be movies or through writing, and the appreciation these actors had for the character seemed to start with the comic books, seemed to start with it jumping off a printed page and having its own life.
I think Hans Gruber has to be in that discussion.
Boom.
Thank you, Bill. He does. I mean,
he doesn't.
What do you mean? We're still talking about Hans Gruber until this day. I mean,
Stugatz, it's not
one of the all-time greats.
It's not across genres. He didn't spawn many actors playing Hans Gruber across.
Because he did it perfect the first time.
Many
man.
Decades. There weren't artistic sort of re-representations by the Heath Ledgers of the world, who's remembered posthumously for that role above all others, where these allow a character to shine, not because Alan Rickman did Hans Gruber perfectly in the original Die Hard.
Hannibal Lecter was started in literature in a novel, so you have
boom
a really good argument there. Dorian Gray, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, Dr. Frankenstein, not to be confused with Frankenstein's monster. The real villain was Dr. Frankenstein.
Jason Voorhees.
Well, we've got Jason Voorhees and Mike Myers.
I mean, Norman Bates.
Rita Repulsa.
Oh, for crying out loud.